From 9 to 5 Mac, this is Stacktrace with me, John Sundell, and Stacktrace's very own on-site correspondent from San Jose. It's Mr. Guy Rambo.
Hi, John. How are you doing? I'm very happy to be here this week.
Yeah, I'm very happy to be here this week, too. I'm doing really well. Things are super hectic, but they are super fun, and I am so much enjoying all of the new announcements from the conference, like we'll go into in much detail. And I'm also really, really enjoying just like experiencing the conference, like on Twitter and with the community and with everybody, like talking about all the new things and commenting on them and writing things about them. It's just super incredible to see.
Yeah, and this is a big year, right?
Yeah, it's not a chance that they use the mind-blown emoji as the logo, right?
Like That's true.
That was very much appropriate. So tell me, how are things in San Jose? Like, what's the mood like? What's it like to actually be there?
The atmosphere here is WWDC. Now I know what people meant when they said that the entire city becomes WWDC. Because yeah. Apple has these signs all over the place. It's not just at the venue. It's everywhere. Everywhere you go, there are WWDC signs. And everything is WWDC. You walk around the streets, you always bump into someone who's attending WWDC. And you can just go up to them and say hi. So it's super fun being here. I was a little bit worried about being here without having a ticket to WWDC, but I can now say it was a great decision and I'm very happy to be here. And I definitely recommend it. Even if you don't have a ticket, come to OutConf, to Layers, and just being here is a really, really cool experience.
Yeah, I so much enjoyed when I was at WWDC back in 2014. It was just a truly mind-blowing, to use that word again, experience. Like, that's the best way I can describe it. It's just like, there's nothing else like it. It's just, like you say, a whole city just being completely transformed into this huge event, you know, for developers. And everyone's a developer. You walk around and everyone's wearing these jackets, you know, you can clearly see who's from the conference. And, well, you don't really have to see because it's everybody. Like, everybody around you is there for the same reason. And it's just like really cool to experience. So I'm definitely planning to come back there again next year. Like, I really, really want to be on site next year at WWDC, either at the conference or just like you, just hanging around the town during the week. But it's also been so much fun to do this like very heavy coverage that I'm doing on WWDC by Sundell. So I am very happy that I stayed back home this year just to focus on this, because I don't think I would have been able to do all of these things that I'm doing this week if I would have been there.
It's definitely hard to balance the time you spend in your hotel room hacking and the time you spend talking to people. I've barely gone to AltConf. I haven't gone to Layers at all yet. Because, yeah, yesterday as we record, so Monday, I was completely focused on unpacking the new stuff, doing some initial spelunking on the OSs, and, installing the betas and trying out some of the new API. I played around with PencilKit yesterday. We're gonna talk about that later. So, yeah, it's really hard, but I'm very happy. I'm excited. And the hype is real.
The hype is real, absolutely.
Yeah.
And speaking about hype, I think it's about time we turn up the hype level to 11 and we do our annual grand Stacktrace WWDC report. What do you say, Rambo? Are you ready to get started?
I am more than ready. Let's go.
Awesome. So let's walk through the keynote in order of the things that were announced. So we'll start by talking about the first thing and we'll move on. And some things we'll probably dive a little bit more deeper into and some things we'll just mention. And we're not going to aim for completion here. Like, we're not going to cover all the things that were announced because, you know, there's the video for that if you want to go back and watch those things. But we'll try to give our opinions and first impressions and things like that of the things that were announced. And of course, at the end, we have to reveal the results of our WWDC poker, which I don't want to spoil it just yet, but it was a close one, Rambo. It was a very close one.
Nice. So we'll see who's gonna win a winner chicken dinner.
Exactly. So let's just start. Before we dive into the actual announcements, I want to hear your kind of opening statement What was your overall impression of this keynote? And what do you think of the kind of pacing, the structure, and the way the kind of event was presented?
I think the pacing was great. I was a little bit worried at the start because they started kind of weird talking about the services again and with the trailer, which the trailer was great, by the way, but it just felt a little bit out of place, but it was over fast. And maybe it was good that they started with that. So that was like the slow part of the keynote, but then it was just firing on all cylinders and then going super quickly through major stuff that they could have spent several minutes talking about, and it was just over super quickly. The time just flew by. It was super fast and very well paced, lots of news. And it's interesting because many people see this as what Apple has been working on for the past year, but that's not how it works.
Right.
This is most of the stuff we saw yesterday. It's stuff that's been worked on for several years, and just now it's ready. Apple is not like most other companies where they talk about stuff and release it 2 years later. Google. of course, they mess up sometimes. AirPower. But most of the time, they keep this stuff secret until it's ready to be announced and shipped. So that's why people usually have this impression, oh, this was a busy year for Apple. No, the past 4 years have been busy, and now we're seeing the results.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that every year is a busy year for Apple, right?
But
it just, like, it all comes down to timing, right? And of course, they probably try to control the timing to some extent. Like, you don't want to just, like, release all the products in one go. You ideally would like for it to be spread out through a year or through several years. But that's not, like, how things work all the time. Like, sometimes things get ready much later than you planned, and sometimes, you know, you extend the scope or you merge projects, you cancel projects, etc., etc. So I think that Apple, they're constantly always working on things, and some of the things that we're going to talk about today, especially like some of the developer tools around the new UI frameworks and things like that, I mean, those are not things that you write in like 6 months. Those are definitely multi-year projects, and it's just now kind of finally being released once it's in a state where it can be released.
Yeah, especially developer tools, because, and we talked about this before, about writing API. This is API developers are going to rely on to release apps that can potentially be used by millions of users. If Apple releases a customer feature and they decide, oh, this didn't work, let's change it or let's cancel it a year later, that's fine. But if they do it with a developer API, that's like, once a developer API is officially out there, it's out there, and they're gonna have to support it for several years. If they can deprecate it later, but it has to be a whole process. And yeah, so releasing a new developer API and Swift UI, which we're gonna talk about later, is a huge developer API. It's a big deal, and it can't be done like, oh, let's just release it. No, it has to be very well thought out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one good way to think about it, if you're a developer, is imagine you've put some code into your app, and then at some point you realize, no, this is not the direction we're going. The design has changed maybe, or just your taste or some underlying frameworks have changed. So you need to refactor that code, and you have some legacy code there in your code base that you want to get rid of. Like, that's a very common situation for any kind of developer, and all developers know that that's something that can take a lot of time and energy to deal with, and it can be really annoying. Now imagine that if you make those decisions in the wrong way, or if you put something out there that turns out to be incorrect, that technical debt is no longer just yours. Like you mentioned, it's once it's out there, people put it in their apps, they ship apps using it, they rely on it. Deprecating a public API is a huge, long process, and it usually upsets people. So something like Swift UI and some of these other like big transformative changes, you need to be really sure about what you're doing when you are shipping something like that. So I totally understand that that's something that Apple has been taking their time with, and it really shows in the API design as well. It seems so far my first impressions are very good, and we're going to dive into it soon, but it's very clear that this is something that they've spent a lot of time thinking about and designing.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like an API that's been worked on for a long time, and it's really cool.
Yeah. So my kind of overall impressions of the keynote very much are the same as yours. Like, I really enjoyed the pacing. I can't believe that an event was like 2 hours long or even more. Like, it felt like it just flew past. Like, it was very, very well paced. And the segues also between the different segments were really good. Like, transitioning from something like tvOS to watchOS to developer tools later on, it just felt so fluid and so nice. And it didn't feel like any segment kind of overstayed its welcome. It felt like all the things were as long as they should be, and things were moving on at a great pace. So big thumbs up on the overall structure and the pace of the event. I think that was really, really good. And right out of the gate, we saw a trailer for Apple's original content, which, you know, we say that Apple usually, they don't like to be reactive and they don't release things or show things just because people said something or because some other company did something. But the reason I think they showed this trailer here a little bit is because they got a lot of feedback after the last event that they didn't show any trailers at all, right? So it was like,
yeah,
you did a whole event about your original content and there were no trailers. Well, here's a trailer. I think that was a big reason, even though it might not have been, you know, the best fit. But I still think the trailer was great, and I think it was awesome. And it was a good way also to get a little bit hyped for this thing, because it was a very like fast-paced trailer, very like a lot of cuts and things like that. So, and also it's a sci-fi show, right? It fits in with the crowd.
Yeah, like Tim Cook was like, oh, let's show this to developers. They're going to love it.
Exactly. So that was the original content, and that was a part of the tvOS segment. So tvOS, we got two new big features. The first one is multi-user support. So you'll be able to use the same Apple TV with multiple people and get personalized recommendations and things like that. And there's even a new little control center where you can switch users and things like that. And also, this is really, really exciting for me personally as a gamer. You can now, or when the new version of tvOS ships, you'll be able to use Xbox One and PlayStation 4 game controllers, which is really awesome and I think is great news for Apple Arcade.
Absolutely, yeah. People were talking about this before the announcement. Like, if Apple wants Arcade to succeed, they really need to open up the OS for more game controllers. And we know that they've been testing these controllers. They've been using them for testing the game. Is it GameKit that handles the controller stuff?
Yeah, it's part of GameKit. Like, I think GameKit, they've changed the names. Like, originally it was only Game Center, but now it's like this umbrella term for a couple of different frameworks, including the Game Controllers framework, which is, I think, the one you're referring to.
Yeah, so they've been using these Xbox One and DualShock controllers to test the GameKit functionality for quite a while now. And it's very nice to see they finally opening that up to everyone. So, yeah, that's going to be a big deal for Arcade.
Yeah, it's a really big deal, not only because these are some really great controllers, and in my opinion, way better than the kind of made for iPhone controllers that you can buy, even though there are some good ones like the SteelSeries controller. I have that one. It's okay, but it's not a PlayStation 4 DualShock. Come on. You know, yeah. Like, that's a way better controller. So I'm very happy that I'll be able to use those controllers like that. But it's also a big deal in terms of a lot of people who have an Apple TV who would potentially be interested in playing games on it, but they're not as excited about it as that they will go out and buy one of these dedicated controllers. But chances are quite high that they already have an Xbox controller or a PlayStation controller in the house because they might have one of those systems. So I think that is a big deal because it really opens up the potential for someone to just one day be curious and connect the controller and hopefully, you know, discover lots of cool things in Apple Arcade.
Yeah, I'm not even much of a gamer, but I do have the PS4 and I have the controller, so I'm definitely going to try it out, and I would definitely not buy one just for the Apple TV.
Right, exactly. So there wasn't a lot of more news about these kind of things. Like, there wasn't a big segment on Apple Arcade. I think part of that might be because it's still in this like early stage where it's like invite only and these kind of things. So it's not really applicable for the large developer audience. And tvOS in general has been a little bit downplayed the last couple of years, where there's not a lot of new OS level features. Apple is mostly focusing on like content and things like that these days. So, and games now with Apple Arcade. So it's understandable that that segment was kind of short.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting Arcade to be in beta on iOS 13. But now if you go to the Arcade tab on iOS 13, it is there in the App Store. It's just like Apple Arcade, games that redefine games, coming soon. That's the tab shows.
Yeah, but that's understandable because they're still working on those games, right? So it will probably be one of those things like they flip a feature flag before the release of the OS in the fall and boom, it's there, right?
Yeah, definitely. And there seem to be significant changes to the App Store infrastructure coming in the fall. They talked about the faster launch times and slower download, slower, faster downloads.
That'd
for
be a
apps.
Great feature.
Slower downloads. Woo! Faster downloads. And that's App Store infrastructure. So that's server side stuff. I'm curious to see how that works. So we're going to see that in the fall, definitely.
Yeah. And speaking about App Store infrastructure, in the Apple Watch segment, we saw something that we've been speculating about and dreaming about a little bit. I've been very much looking forward to the day when the Apple Watch is more becoming independent. And that's what's happening now, because it's getting its very own App Store, like you've also been speculating about. And you can get apps that can be distributed and run without an iPhone app. So completely standalone watch apps. There's new APIs that lets you do more advanced networking, more advanced audio streaming, so that the Apple Watch apps can become more powerful. And of course, the Apple Watch is also part of this new Swift UI framework, which we'll talk about towards the end. So not a lot of features per se in Apple Watch or in watchOS, but I think this is a pretty big deal for Apple Watch. What do you think?
Absolutely. And you mentioned Swift UI. It was funny because Kevin, he said like, oh, an Apple Watch and watchOS is coming soon, and there's a new native UI framework. We're going to talk about that later. And it was over so fast, and almost no one noticed it. But I, like, when he said UI framework, my ears were like a radar up, like, oh my God. It was like when a dog hears the word food.
Right, exactly. Or the doorbell.
Yeah. So, and I always kind of, did he really say that? And then I noticed that people on Twitter were talking about it. So he definitely mentioned new native UI framework for the Apple Watch. So that's really, really cool. And, the independence from the phone is a theme this year, and I guess this is the start of we getting to a point where Apple Watch will be its own thing and will not need an iPhone anymore.
Yeah, I think we'll look back on it just the same way we look back on requiring a Mac in order to use an iPhone, right? Like, when you're in that era, it seems like the most natural thing in the world. Of course, I buy an iPhone, the first thing I do is connect it to iTunes. Of course, why wouldn't I, right? But then once you move past that era and you have that independent device, it kind of seems like barbaric to have to connect your iPhone to your Mac.
Like an animal.
Exactly. So I think the same thing will be true for Apple Watch, where once it goes completely independent and you can go to the store, you can pick up an Apple Watch and you can just walk out, you can turn it on and it just works. I think that will be a big step. And it's not only like, will you always use the Apple Watch without an iPhone? Probably not. But it just sets them apart enough in terms of the overall architecture of the systems that I think they will just function so much better as their own devices. Because if we think about it, like from the beginning, the Apple Watch has always been like very tethered to the iPhone. And this, especially in the beginning, made it very slow because it had to do all these networking round trips to the phone and things like that. But especially now with the Series 4, with cellular and apps are starting to become a little bit more independent, you know, the device becomes so much more capable and the apps become so much more faster and better. And this is really what I'm hoping to see as a kind of result of this ongoing independence declaration.
Yeah, and they even joked about declaring independence.
Yeah, exactly. And especially in the State of the Union, when they segued between watchOS and iOS, is like, and now the platform that we just declared independence from. That was really great.
So next up was iOS 13, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we're once again seeing Apple putting a heavy focus on performance. Like you mentioned, there's boosted app download speeds, faster launch speeds. Face ID is apparently something like 30% faster, which I think is great, because that's been a common theme when people talk about Face ID, is that it's great, but we wish it would be a little bit faster, right? And it seems like we're getting that this year.
Yeah, what I heard from people using the iPhone X is that, and who have also used the new iPhones, is that on iPhone X, it's now as fast as an iPhone XS or XS Max or XR running iOS 12. And I didn't notice any difference. I am running the beta on my test device, an iPhone XR, so I didn't notice any difference when unlocking the device. But I did notice a significant speed improvement when doing Face ID operations for authentication in apps and like 1Password and for purchases and stuff like that. So yeah, it's definitely faster.
Yeah, because it's easy to think about Face ID as something that you only use when unlocking the phone, right? When you are just picking it up. And of course, that's an important thing. Like you want to get in, you want to do something, you wanted that to be fast. But you're using Face ID many, many times, sometimes throughout one session, because you go to some app and Face ID tries to recognize you to fill in your password, or you are opening some app like your bank app and it's using Face ID, or you are buying an app from the App Store. Like there's so many interactions that we do, or using Apple Pay that require Face ID. And it's just great to see that being more and more fast, because it just adds to that kind of science fiction element where it almost feels like you don't have a passcode at all. Like your iPhone just magically recognizes you.
Yeah, to be fair, it's been feeling like that for me since the iPhone X. But it's even more true with the XS and XS Max and XR. And it's even more true now with iOS 13. So they're doing a killer job with performance.
Yeah, really looking forward to trying that out. So we've got dark mode, of course. That was pretty much a given.
Woo!
So how are you feeling now that you are seeing dark mode in action? You've seen what some of the apps look like, etc. Is it everything that you were dreaming about?
So I wasn't one of those people who was clamoring for dark mode for a long time. I mean, I like it, but it wasn't like on my wish list of stuff. But it is really nice. Yeah, it's actually better than I expected it to be. It's it's comfortable to use. But right now you have, of course, the same problem you have on the Mac. That's, yeah, none of the apps are optimized yet. But if you're using like Tweetbot in dark mode, you just leave it in dark mode and then it fits with the system. But the built-in apps, I think Apple has done a really good job with like music, reminders, even the system UI, like the notifications, the today widgets, the materials for the tab bars and nav bars. That's all looking great. And also even like the Face ID animation when you authenticate inside an app. It's also gorgeous in dark mode with the vibrant blue color. So yeah, it's really nice.
It seems like Apple's investment in moving to these kind of frosted glass panels, you know, like these panels that are like vibrant, they're using the vibrancy effect. It seems like that has really paid off now with dark mode, because you can take those very same panels and just tint them with a darker tint, right? Like with a darker shade, and it all kind of just works.
Yeah, and I really like the materials aspect. It's not material design. It's,
right, exactly.
Yeah, so they call those materials because they are like materials. They're like, oh, you have this glass, and this is a white glass, and this is a gray glass, and this is a frosted glass with a black tint. And yeah, it looks great. I'm very happy with it. And I think, I haven't looked into the API yet at all, but I suspect it's going to be quite easy to adopt. And they are also introducing semantic colors that developers can adopt to make it even easier. So instead of saying like, oh, this background is going to be white, you say this is going to be this, the color for this background is going to be background, and the system will do the right thing for you.
Yeah, exactly. And one idea that popped into my head when I heard about that, because it's not always that you want to use those exact colors, but you could base your colors on that. So let's say that you want to have a slightly kind of off-white background, and maybe you want to have a little bit more towards the gray spectrum in dark mode in your background, you could use those semantic colors as the baseline and then kind of just modify them a little bit to fit in with your app's brand or your colors that you prefer.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky because it's not only about light and dark. If it's about light and dark, you can do it with asset catalogs. You can define a separate color for light and dark mode and even for high contrast modes. But it's also about, it also handles things such as reduced transparency, which can be enabled in the OS. And it also handles, like they explained, I think, in the platform State of the Union, if you have you have your main app window, it's basically black. But then if you open a sheet on top of that, it's going to be slightly gray, but it's the same named color. So it's also the background color, but it looks different because it's another layer. And they also change the background color when you have your app in split view. So it's easier to distinguish between separate apps in split view. Otherwise, it will look like this entire black blob that you can't really tell where one app ends and the other one begins. So, it's a little bit tricky, but I think, yeah, you can, for the developers who are listening, and I think we talked about this in our mini episode in WWDC by Sandel.
Yeah.
Use asset catalogs for colors. That's your best bet going forward.
Absolutely. And since you knew so much about dark mode beforehand, this wasn't a big surprise to you. That interview, we did do that as a kind of preview thing before WWDC, but I think the advice that you gave in that interview still holds up very much. So we'll put a link to that interview in the show notes as well. It's one of those things, like the things you mentioned with the semantic colors and Apple doing all this automatic work for you. It's one of those things where if all the apps were just completely adopting all of the APIs in all the ways that Apple wanted to, we would have this super nice and consistent system, right? But we all know that's not going to happen. But hopefully we will get close to that vision anyway.
Yeah, I am on the... I have the belief that this consistency that people talk about is overrated. So many people are completely obsessed with some sort of consistency, and they're like, oh, Reminders has this 1 point larger font than Music. This is awful. Apple doesn't know how to do design anymore. It's the end of the world. Apple is doomed. Yeah, I mean, I don't see... I don't think that type of consistency is important, to be honest. I think it's important to have consistency at a behavior level. That's really important. And then to have design guidelines. But visually, I don't think there needs to be that much consistency. I mean, if an app completely ignores dark mode, that's going to be a problem. But if it's a little bit different than the built-in system one, I don't think that's a problem.
Yeah, I agree. Because also, the lack of consistency between apps and apps using different colors and different styles, it both kind of helps you identify the app that you're using. Like, you know which app is what based on how it looks. But it also helps with that phenomenon that you were mentioning earlier, where everything, you know, comes together as one big blob of black content. If all the apps look different and they use different colors and things, hopefully still, you know, respecting the dark versus light theme in terms of the contrast and things like that, it will be just be easier to identify apps overall.
Yeah, and like I suspect most third-party apps will just use the dark mode as a switch, because there are many, many, many apps already that have their own dark mode. So they're not gonna, most of them are not gonna re-implement dark mode to follow the iOS standard one. They're just gonna use the system setting as a hint to like use dark mode or not.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so exciting release for iOS, but kind of a theme here is that it seems like Apple is focusing more on refinements and also developer tools this year. So there are not that many big user-facing features in the operating systems, but there's some nice tweaks. There's things like dark mode, of course, which, you know, can potentially be a big deal. But overall, just polishes and nice upgrades overall. Next up, it was a quite interesting point in the keynote because Apple, they fired some shots at Facebook and Google, which I think was pretty interesting to see. But before we talk about that, let's take a very quick break and thank this episode's special sponsor. Because for this special episode of the show, we wanted to find a very special sponsor. And of course, it's our good friends at Mac Stadium. You might already have heard about Mac Stadium. Rambo is using them for share cuts. We've talked about them here on the show before. But they have some really exciting WWDC news of their own, since they are launching a brand new platform that'll take running a Mac in the cloud to all new levels. Mac Stadium is the leading provider of Mac hardware in the cloud. Using Mac Stadium, you can move your Mac automation, your servers, build tools to a fully scalable system, ranging from a single Mac Mini to multiple Macs, forming your very own private cloud. And with their new platform called Orca, you'll get advanced orchestration and virtualization capabilities in an easy-to-use package. Orca lets you deploy anything you want to run on Mac Stadium using Kubernetes and Docker containers, which lets you set up things like your own custom build pipeline, advanced processing using Apple tools and frameworks, or Mac-specific web servers, like, again, Rambo is using with Sharecuts. You can do all of this with predictable containers. Now, if you think this sounds cool, then we have some really good news for you, because Mac Stadium is offering Stacktrace listeners special early access to this new Orca platform. You'll also get a free trial, so if you're curious to try out this new platform and see for yourself just how many cool things you can do with macOS running in the cloud, containerized using Docker and Kubernetes, then you can do so right now with nothing to lose. And if that wasn't enough, Mac Stadium is also giving all of you wonderful Stacktrace listeners a 50% discount on the first 2 months of a Mac Mini subscription. Really great deal. So go to macstadium.com/stacktrace to learn more, to start your 14-day free trial. And then when you sign up, just put 9to5Mac next to your company name, and that will give you access to this new Orca platform. You'll also find more information on that page about Mac Stadium and how to get that extra 50% discount on your first 2 months of a Mac Mini subscription. Once again, that's macstadium.com/stacktrace to learn more about Mac Stadium and running macOS in the cloud. Thanks so much to Mac Stadium for sponsoring this episode of Stacktrace. All right, so Apple, they did something that they don't usually do. Usually when they talk about the competitors, it's a little bit more subtle. But this time when they introduced Sign-In with Apple, which is their single sign-on solution that we've actually been speculating about in the past, they specifically mentioned Sign-In with Google and Sign-In with Facebook as two solutions that they kind of want to combat because they are, you know, taking a lot of user data and giving it to third parties, etc. And of course, Apple solution is private by default. It's, you know, secure and things like that. So what do you think both about this announcement and the feature itself, but also how the way it was presented?
I think it goes back a little bit to the Steve Jobs days, because he was a lot more into this type of stuff, mocking the competition and mocking Windows, especially back then. Those were fun times, right?
Yeah, those were the really good old days.
Yeah.
When all bets were off, it was just like trash talk, anything that goes.
So, yeah, but I really think this is a good approach. And I think these other companies, they are just now starting to say they care about privacy. But Apple has been doing a lot in terms of privacy. They started saying stuff about privacy a while ago, but they started worrying about privacy and putting that in practice way, way before that. So we have to see if these other companies are just saying that they care about privacy now, or if they're actually gonna do anything about it. But yeah, this is really, really great, and it's something I really wanted them to do.
Yeah.
And someone asked me about this, and I was telling them that this was actually possible before already, but now they are packaging it in a nice way that's easy to use and comes with really cool features like the email address randomization thing.
Yeah, I think they've really nailed it here because they've introduced something here that both is great for users in terms of privacy and security and things like that, but it doesn't make the experience worse. And it's also great for developers, because even though there will be some of these like big data apps, you know, like these data hungry apps that just want all the information they can, and they most likely won't adopt this unless they're forced to, which it does seem like Apple is going to do, reading the updated App Store guidelines. It looks like they will actually enforce that apps that uses these kind of single sign-on techniques will also need to offer sign-in with Apple.
That's true.
But it's going to be great for normal developers, let's call them that. Like developers that have good intentions, that they don't want to steal your data. They just want you to offer a way to log in, to keep a user session, etc. This will be great because like they mentioned in the State of the Union, I think it was, you don't have to worry about emails being like fake or not verified. You don't have to worry about bots. You don't have to worry about so many of these things that you will have to worry about if you roll your own solution. And at the same time, users will have a great experience and they will also have a more private and secure experience. So I think this is really well designed from kind of all different perspectives. And I'm really looking forward to seeing it in action.
Yeah, making it mandatory can sound like, oh, Apple just want developers to use their thing because they're Apple and they have all the power and yada yada. But that's actually really, really good because they are ensuring that every Apple user has a privacy-focused option to log into these apps. And you're only required to do it if you already have other login methods like Facebook and Google and others. So if you don't use any of that and you only have your own login solution, I don't think you're required to support it. But if you have these privacy invading login solutions, you have to give your users the option that respects their privacy. And that's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's really great because, you know, we've all used these apps that you open them up and the first thing they say is, well, you have to create an account. Okay, great. And there are these huge buttons for sign in with Google, sign in with Facebook. And then at the bottom of the screen, there's this mini 10-point size link that says, sign in with email.
Yeah.
And I'm just really looking forward to not having to do that whole dance again. Because so many times, one thing we didn't talk about earlier when we talked about iOS was the location services where you can just enable location access once. The same thing is true here. So many times I just want to use an app once to look something up or to buy a ticket for something or whatever. And I don't want to like give them access to all my data. So I think this is a great solution for that.
You know what, John?
What?
This was a radar of mine.
Oh, yeah? It was?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying they did it because I filed a radar because
it's all because of Rambo. It's the Rambo button.
It was probably duped already, but yeah, I had filed a radar because there are many apps like a food delivery app. It doesn't need to track my location constantly. It just needs my location once to find out where I am, just so I don't have to type my address. So that's convenient and that's fairly private. It's just a one-time thing. But before this, you had to give it permission to use your location every time you had the app open on your device. And they don't need that. So, and there are many, many other cases where that's not required. You can only allow it once and that's it. So I think this is really, really cool. And by the way, did you notice that always is not an option anymore in the dialogue that shows up?
Yeah, I think that's really great. And it seems like Apple has been taking this like step-by-step approach where in the beginning, always was the default. And it seems like a lot of apps, like you could even read code samples online and tutorials that said, you know, as soon as you have location access, you will have it forever. You know, like yeah. Save some value in user defaults. Location enabled true. Okay, great. But then they introduced a few years ago that, no, you can't make that assumption anymore because now you can also say only while it's active. And now they're taking that even further to say only once. And like you say, always is not even on the table anymore. I guess you can enable it in settings if you really want to.
The way it works now is that when the app asks for always location, you have the option to give it the just once permission or the while using the app permission. And then if you give it the while using the app permission, when the app actively tries to use your location in the background, then a dialog pops up. This app is trying to use your location in the background. Do you want to allow this? And then you allow it. So it's more like right now this app is trying to track you in the background. Do you want to allow this? It's a lot more disruptive to the user. And I think that's a good thing because many apps, when you open them, and I actually have an example of this in my talk about privacy, they just pop up all of these permission dialogues one after another, and people just go, okay, allow, 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 and you don't even read what's going on. But now it's like they can't track you in the background, and then you're using like your iPhone, and then, oh, this game wants to track your location in the background. That's more likely to make people deny it.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just hoping that this will not lead to another instance of that, like, alert fatigue that you mentioned, where, you know, as soon as you close any app, it will start asking you and people will just hit accept because they just want to move on with their lives. Hopefully it will be a little bit smart in terms of how it schedules it and, you know, put it in the right context, etc. So, yeah, but I think it's great. Like, giving people more granular options is really great, both for privacy, but also for things like battery life. Because I remember, I know you shouldn't force quit your apps. I know that, and I don't do that. But there was a time when I was always force quitting some really location-hungry apps, like navigation apps and Google Maps and things like that, because they were just draining a lot of battery. I can see it in the battery stats in the that they were draining a lot of battery on the background. And I just were force quitting them because they were just using location in the background without me being able to stop it. But now I can, thanks to these like more granular controls.
No, you're fine there, John. Those are allowed. I always tell people, don't force quit your apps except for like Google Maps, Facebook and stuff like that. You shouldn't have the Facebook app, but if you're crazy and you do, force quit it.
Right, exactly. All right, let's talk about Siri. Siri is getting a new, fully algorithmically generated voice. Now, this is pretty cool because you would think that if an AI or a personal assistant, digital assistant, would get a more robotic voice, that would make them sound more robotic, right? But this makes Siri sound more natural, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, so what did you think of the example they gave? I mean... It was possible to see it was better, but I don't know, it was such a technical text that they made Siri say that, I don't know, I think they could have chosen something more human.
Yeah, like read a passage from a book or something, right? Like something more organic. I guess what they were really demonstrating was mostly the gaps between words. Like when you were listening to the old or the current Siri, it's more like something, 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 gap, something else, gap. You know, like there are these gaps, and with the new voice, it just sounded more fluid. Like it sounded like one continuous sentence, even though you can still clearly hear that it's a robot speaking, but it's getting close. Like it's getting really close to being almost sounding like a human. And that's both exciting and scary.
Yeah, that's true. So, John, there was one thing about Siri that I think you're going to enjoy a lot. And that's that Siri will now read your messages right into your AirPods and you can just respond instantly.
Yeah, that has me really excited because as listeners of the show will know, I'm a huge fan of talking to Siri through my AirPods to probably the amusement of a lot of people around me who think that I'm just this crazy person speaking out into the air and speaking in English, by the way, because, you know, I live in Poland and here people speak Polish. So there's this guy walking around. He's speaking, you know, out into the air in English. Very, very peculiar. Now I will not only speak out loud like commands, I will actually have a conversation with some unknown entity. And that will probably make a lot of people turn their heads. But for me, it's fine. I'm enjoying it. And I think this is super cool because I think interacting with voice is, of course, something where it's not always the best way to interact with something. But when you're out and about and you are out walking or something and you just want to quickly do something, having something become more like a conversation back and forth with something like Siri can really just make things just sound more fluid. And that's something that I've been really enjoying with the new AirPods. And I've spoken about this before, where since I can now just say, hey, Dingus, out in the air, while I'm like walking through the airport, I can just say, hey, Dingus, remind me about this if I just something pops into my head. And it just makes it more likely that I will actually write something down and not forget about it. And in the case of this, it will just make it more nice and pleasant to like have conversations with people and things over text messages while I'm out walking or something like that without taking up my phone.
It can remind me to write the gas bills.
Exactly.
Yesterday, I told Siri to remind me to write the guest post.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
For your website, and the reminder was write guest bills. I guess it's the laryngitis speaking.
Yeah, maybe. But also, sometimes you do have to decipher these reminders after the fact. they're getting better and better, I must say. Like, especially using like data from your contacts or your email and things like that. Because sometimes I can say, for example, remind me to reply to Bitrise. And in the beginning, I remember it said Bitrise, like rice, like the thing you eat. But now it says Bitrise, like the actual name of the company. So it's pretty cool. It seems like it's learning, but hopefully it won't grow sentient too fast.
Bitrise. Sounds delicious.
It does, doesn't it? All right, so Siri, exciting. I'm going to have lots of great conversations, deep conversations with Siri as I'm out walking the streets of Krakow here in Poland. But let's go ahead now and talk about the new operating system. Should we call it a new operating system, Rambo? What do you think? iPadOS, is it just a marketing term or is it actually a real operating system?
Well, yesterday I was spelunking this stuff, as one does.
Of course.
It's really just a marketing name. There's nothing special about it. It's still Springboard, it's still the same underlying structure. It's just iOS, but they decided to name it iPadOS. I was talking to Seth and Jordan. We're working here at the hotel lobby, and we came to the conclusion that they were probably like, oh, there are so many cool things for iPad. Why don't we actually call it another name just to get people even more excited about it? And I think, I'm not complaining. I think it's fine. It is really just a marketing name for now. It could mean more in the future.
Yeah, I think it sounds more like a direction to me than an actual like technical implementation. It sounds like pretty much like drawing a line in the sand and saying, okay, from now on, the iPad is allowed to evolve without necessarily the iPhone evolving alongside of it, if that makes sense. So far, it feels like every time there's been a new iPad feature, it also needed to be on the iPhone somehow because iPhone is the important device. But now, since there's a distinction between them in terms of naming, it feels like Apple is more free to let the iPad evolve on its own and become more of its own thing instead of just being like bigger iPhone.
Yeah, with the recent changes and with Swift UI, I think we are more and more moving in a direction where it's just going to be Apple OS.
Yeah.
And they're going to do it in the best way possible. And I think they are doing it in the best way possible. We're going to talk about this when we talk about Catalyst later. And they are keeping each OS focused on what it needs to do and with the interaction model it's been designed for. But they are unifying everything a lot. So I think we are moving towards a future where it's just going to be Apple OS, but it's not going to be like the Windows stuff where you have this weird tablet UI on your desktop.
Right, exactly. Because with Swift UI and with some of these new developer tools, like it seems like all of the new frameworks that Apple makes are more or less cross-platform by default. Sure, there are some things like ARKit, for example, is not on the Mac because, well, there's not a camera on each Mac, right? Like, except for the camera that you use for FaceTime calls and things like that. But all the other devices have it. And with Swift UI and with some of these new frameworks, like it's clear that they are moving more towards that direction, like you're saying, where you are not necessarily saying like, this is this specific Mac UI, there's this specific iPad UI. You're just saying, here's my content, here's my UI, here I hereby declare how I want it to look, and the system renders it in whatever way is appropriate for each device. So making touch targets larger on the iPad and on the iPhone, and making things more organized in a more Mac way on the Mac and things like that. And I think that's a great direction to head in.
Yeah, and one of the problems with that approach is that it is testing. Like, how do I figure out what it's going to look like on each different type of interface? And they solved that in Xcode with the preview thing where you can check out how it looks on the watch and the iPhone and with dynamic size and with dark mode and light mode and on the Mac. And yeah, it's super good. We're going to talk more about this, but as you can tell, I'm excited.
I'm excited too.
Let's talk about iPadOS.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm also really excited about all the multitasking things. Like multitasking on the iPad has... I haven't yet become a true best friend with it, to be honest. I've had the iPad now for close to 6 months, or maybe more than that. I've kind of lost count. But still, like, I don't feel super used to the way multitasking works. But with this, it looks a lot better. It looks a lot more intuitive, where basically anything that's a panel or anything that's floating on top can be dragged off and into its own space, and you can drag off different notes, and you can have multiple windows for an app, and you can have this stack of slide over panels, so you can just cycle through them. If you have like iMessage and Twitter and things like that in slide over, you can just have all those things in one place. It just seems to me that even though it's probably going to take some getting used to, because it is quite advanced in terms of the interaction model, it feels like all this power and all these different combinations of things you can do will just make it easier to adopt it to your specific workflow.
Yeah, so let's talk about the home screen a little bit. I'm actually looking at my little iPad Pro, the cute 11-inch iPad Pro I bought here. Because, of course, I didn't bring my iPad Pro and I bought another one here.
As of one course does. You did. As you do. That's not what as someone does. That's as you do.
Yeah, so now you can have your widgets in the home screen. And I think they did it in a really nice way. They show up as a column to the left. And it shows you the time and the dates right there. And you can see your widgets there. And it's really cool. Like, one of my favorite widgets on iOS is the batteries widget. So you can see the battery for your device, for AirPods, Apple Pencil, and things like that. And now I can have it right on my home screen, so I don't have to be swiping to the side to see that. So yeah, that's really cool. It's a small change. We were expecting a little bit more, but I think that's probably for another year. But the whole way apps work is having an addition to it with the concept of scenes.
Yes, that's right. We were expecting the breakup of iTunes in this release, and we did get that, but we did not expect the breakup of the app delegates. That's the breakup we should really be excited about.
Definitely. So yeah, so now an app can have multiple different scenes, and for the developers out there, and I haven't looked into it that much yet. I need to watch the session later when it's live. Instead of having just your app delegate that handles your entire app, you can have different scenes. So you can have like a document scene and a main scene and a library scene. And each one of these scenes can be opened separately. It's one instance of your app. So it's not like running multiple processes of your app, still just one process. But you can have these different windows that are called scenes on iOS. So, and they can be put into the sidebar on iPad. They can be combined with a separate app, or you can have like two columns for the same app. So it's quite flexible what you can do with them. So yeah, I'm super excited about that. One thing that got me worried though, but again, I haven't watched the session yet. So I just looked at the documentation. It looks like you have to use storyboards to be able to use scenes. I'm not sure, but I didn't see anywhere a way for you to create these scenes programmatically. And that's a bit of a bummer to me. But I mean, there's probably a way, and I just couldn't find it. I don't know.
But Rambo, haven't you gotten the memo? Haven't you heard the big news? the great new thing, which is storyboards are dead.
Woo!
There are no more storyboards. There's Swift UI, which is all code.
Oh,
it's amazing.
Yeah, but it's funny because the documentation for scenes only mentions storyboards.
Right. Maybe it was like written without Swift UI in mind, or maybe they didn't get the memo or didn't have time to update it.
Yeah.
But I've been coding with Swift UI today, and the new scene delegate, which is the kind of way to handle multiple windows and the new object in your app that will take over the life cycle of each UI session instead of being the whole life cycle of the app itself, like all those things tied together. Mm-hmm. It's definitely 100% usable with code only. You can create a window. You can assign root view controller to it. It works just like the app delegate did.
Oh, nice.
And with Swift UI, you don't need storyboards because the editor that you see on the right when you're using Swift UI and you are editing things visually, it actually just updates your code. So there's no need anymore for these storyboard files. And of course, I'm saying storyboards is dead. I'm joking a little bit because I'm sure we'll still keep using them in many apps for years. But the new way forward is more focused on the new declarative UI framework and the code of it instead of being these like resource files like storyboards were.
We keep bringing it up just because it's so cool, but I'm going to contain myself. We're going to talk about Swift UI later. Yeah, but it's super cool.
It's a very interesting keynote when there are all these cool things. Like, we haven't even talked about the Mac Pro, right?
Wow.
Which was going into this keynote. That was probably what I was the most excited about, like just thinking about it.
And then
but
you
now,
saw the
like,
price.
This new framework. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But before we get to the Mac Pro, I just want to touch a little bit on Apple Pencil, because you mentioned earlier the new Pencil Kit framework, and you mentioned that you've been looking into these things a little bit as well. So can you give us a bit of a rundown? Like, what is the Pencil Kit framework? What's new with Apple Pencil?
This makes me so happy. We talked about this on Stacktrace that it bothers me when Apple releases these really new cool features in the OS and their apps, but they don't offer any way for developers to take advantage of them. And the Pencil was one of those things. Getting Apple Pencil drawing in an app is really hard. Like, it's a super specialized kind of work. You have to get like this smooth performance you get like in the Notes app. That's like super hard. And I was postponing implementing Pencil support in Chibi Studio because of that, because it's the perfect app to have Pencil support. But I'm not like an expert graphics engineer. I can't write like a drawing engine. I could probably do something lame and laggy, but I didn't want to do that. But now they are introducing Pencil Kit, which is, I'm pretty sure it used to be a private API and they're making it public now. So now every app can take advantage of the same Pencil drawing capabilities you have in markup, you have when you are, like taking a screenshot and marking it up, you have in the Notes app. So all apps can have access to that. And I was playing around with it yesterday, John, and it's super nice. It's this canvas view you instantiate.
Awesome.
And then you can control like the visibility of a palette of tools. And the drawing itself is this object. And the best thing about it is that this object conforms to the codable protocol.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you can save it directly to disk or send it over the network or anything. It's just like ready to be packaged up.
Exactly. I love this. Like, I want to see Apple do this with more things in their APIs, like conforming model objects to codable. For those who don't know, basically what that means is if you want to save that data to disk, like save your drawing to disk, it's super easy. If you want to send it over the network, do like a collaborative drawing app over multi-peer connectivity, it's super easy because you can turn that memory into data super easily and do the opposite as well super easily. And I'm super happy about this. And yeah, Chibi Studio on iOS 13, you're going to be able to draw over your chibis, create custom items, paint your chibis and everything like that.
That's super cool. I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And I've been experimenting a lot with the Apple Pencil, as listeners of the show will know, because I do think it's a super interesting way of interacting with an app, because it gives you this whole new layer of interactivity. But like you also mentioned, in order to do something like drawing, you have to write all that code yourself, or you did have to write all that code yourself in previous versions of iOS, because you just got like touch events, just like you do when the user swipes their finger on the screen. But now with this specialized view, and I assume you get like vector data, like all this data that you get is not just a bitmap, but you can actually like transform it, and you can use it in whatever ways you want in your app, which just looks super cool.
Yeah, and you can also get a bitmap if you want to, and it's super easy to do. And another thing that got me really excited and that makes me really happy is to see that these new APIs, they're not coming only to iOS. PencilKit is available on the Mac as well.
That's fantastic.
I guess I haven't tried it out yet, but I guess you can use your trackpad and your fingers to draw. And of course, it's not the ideal situation, but it's good. But with Sidecar, which we're going to talk about later,
yeah,
you can use the Apple Pencil, and it's mind-blowing.
Let's actually use Sidecar as a little bit of a segue between the iPad and the Mac, because I think with a lot of these announcements, like we mentioned, like a lot of these technologies are on multiple platforms, and that's great, but it's also blurring the lines a little bit between what they're talking about. And that happened also a lot during the keynote, where they were back referencing like iOS in the Mac segment and things like that. So Sidecar is interesting because you had heard about this, but you knew it as that name, as a project
code name, yeah,
you know, as a code name. And now it turned out to actually be the real name. Like, that's actually what it was called.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know why they didn't do it for Marzipan. If they could do it for Sidecar, Marzipan is better than Catalyst.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. Especially since like everyone has been talking about Marzipan, but maybe it's also a little bit because some people weren't very happy with the first iteration of Marzipan. So maybe they wanted like a clean break.
That makes sense. Yeah, that there was a little bit of prejudice against Marzipan. Yesterday, right, I was talking to someone from Apple, and they were like, oh yeah, and we've been trying out Marzipan, Catalyst.
Yeah.
So
Sidecar, tell us about it. It's you've been trying it out. The performance looks amazing. So what's it like using it?
John, it's the best. Oh my god. I think like I don't remember the last time something was so mind-blowing to me using it in real life. I'm not talking about the demo, which of course the demos are always great. I mean, not always, but most of the times the demos are great, but I tried it out here. I have the beta one running on an iPad, and I have Catalina running on my MacBook Pro, and it's so good. I just can't understand how it can be so good, and the latency is so small. You can barely notice that it's running wirelessly, and I'm at a hotel in San Jose, close to WWDC, with probably lots of wireless interference going on. And it's perfect. And I actually tried it out, and I moved a Photoshop window to the iPad using Sidecar. And you can use the Apple Pencil in Photoshop on the Mac, and it detects pressure and tilt and everything like that. It's just mind-blowing. This is like, yeah, I don't remember the last time a technology was so impressive to me.
Yeah, that sounds really fantastic. And I really loved what I've seen so far. And it also really opens it up to do something like have a Mac in your office. And when you want to go work on, you know, on the couch or on your balcony or in the garden or whatever, you can just bring your little Mac with you, you know, even if you're on your iPad, you can access it more easily. So I'm really looking forward to trying that out. But I'm thinking, you're saying like over hotel Wi-Fi, but doesn't this use like peer-to-peer connectivity? Like, does it really go over the actual Wi-Fi? That sounds It sounds like that would be
No,
hard.
I don't think he actually uses the Wi-Fi. I'm just mentioning that I'm here and that there's lots of
Right.
interference. Like that, there are hundreds of Wi-Fi networks here. So
Yeah.
I was expecting it to be super laggy and crashy, and it was perfect. I moved the Safari window on the iOS preview website that they have, and I was scrolling and scrolled like butter, and it was beautiful. So I'm super impressed. How good is this?
Yeah, that's one of those things. Like, I love third-party apps, and I love, you know, companies and indies making cool apps for Apple's ecosystem, and I want everyone to make as many cool apps as they can, but some things are just better on the system level, and this is definitely one of those things where I'm sure, like, all of the latency reducing things that you've mentioned, they can just be done like on the OS level, probably at like the lowest level where it's like diffing what's happening, only sending the absolute minimum amount of data, you know, really packaging it very efficiently and making so many assumptions about the end-to-end because it's all controlled by Apple. I think that's just one of those things that can only truly be done on the system level.
Yeah, and again, this is beta 1 on both devices, and I was running it for several minutes and I didn't hear the fans spin up. So it's also good on performance.
Yeah, that's crazy. And speaking about performance, now it's time to talk about the big, big, massive announcements in the shape of the Mac Pro and the Pro Display XDR. Now, these things are quite spectacular from many, many different points of view. First of all, incredible amounts of power. Like, I think Apple went above and beyond what anyone was expecting. Like, when they were quoting some of these specs, like, it sounded to me that they were talking about astronomy, you know? Like, it was like, you know, it's almost like when people talk about, like, how much a planet weighs. It's like, you can't comprehend it. It was almost at that level in terms of these specs. And it's like 1.5 terabyte of RAM.
Yeah.
That's more than the storage I have on my computer, you know?
Yeah.
And that's RAM. All of these things just really, really blowing everything else away. And also in terms of the design, like, this design is so interesting. And I mean, I know a lot of people making the cheese grater joke. It looks like a cheese grater, ha ha ha. But it's super interesting in terms of design language because it doesn't almost look like anything Apple's ever made. I mean, sure, the old tower had a little bit of a resemblance in terms of, like, yeah, it was a tower with holes in it. But this looks like, for me, it looks like it's almost from another parallel universe side of Apple.
That's true. It was unbelievable when I saw it for the first time. But you mentioned the cheese grater jokes, which I think are great. But what's even more funny, and of course, you're never sure if people are joking or not, but I saw some people like, in the Steve Jobs days, Apple would never release a computer that looks like a cheese grater. Yeah.
Oh, but they did.
Yeah, they did. It was the original cheese grater. So,
yeah exactly.
So it's great. And of course, this is, and that's an important aspect. Like, this is not a computer for us. This is a computer for really, really high end film and video production people who spend like $100,000 on a camera and $200,000 on a lens. I'm talking to you, MKBHD. so this is for those types of people. So that's why I don't even comment on the price. Like, it's an expensive machine, but yeah, it deserves to be. It's for a market that the like $6,000 is nothing for that market.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a rounding error, right?
Yeah.
In the spreadsheets. I think that's important, and it's an important perspective to have when you look at these things, because if you haven't done any kind of B2B kind of, you know, things, business to business, where you are looking at much, much larger numbers, just think about in your company where you work. Just think about the number of employees and their salaries and the cost for the office and these kind of things. Like, any kind of company of any kind of size, they have a much, much higher, like, turnover in terms of money than you and me have, like, as private people. So, of course, when we look at this and it's $5,000, it looks you know, or $6,000 even for the computer, the starting price, that's a starting price. You can wait until you spec it up to 1.5 terabytes of RAM, then it's not going to be $6,000 anymore, I tell you that. It looks crazy, right? It looks again, like astronomy. But for businesses, this is, again, kind of like a rounding error. Not for all businesses, of course, but the ones that you mentioned that already are spending this huge amount of money on other kinds of equipment, getting something like this, if it meets their needs and if it makes them more productive, it can actually save them money, right? Where if the renders are faster, if the photographers, if the photo editors, the movie editors, whoever we're talking about here, if they're more efficient, they can get more things done, that saves the company money. So I think that's an important perspective to have when we're talking about here. We're not talking about like private people's economy. We're talking about the economy of companies, which is just like much, much higher numbers in general.
And how about the display?
The display is beautiful. And again, like I love that design language. I love those like holes and the color of the metal. Like everything just looks super cool. It's definitely not for me, these things. Like that was very clear when they started the segment. I was kind of waiting a little bit for this to decide whether or not I would go for something like this or a Mac Mini. But now it's pretty clear I'm going for the Mac Mini.
Of course.
Because, you know, once they started talking, it's like, it's so over the top. It's so, you know, crazy. But it's just so awesome to watch. It's just so cool to see Apple back again in this like high performance game. Like, let's break all the benchmarks. Let's do all those things. Let's make this crazy display that just blows everything else out of the water. It's super cool to see.
Yeah, and like you, I was also looking forward to this to also kind of think about what I'm going to do, because I've been thinking more and more about getting a desktop. And yeah, I'm definitely going for the iMac Pro, and I'm going to wait for them to update it, which will probably happen this year. Because, yeah, like, I wouldn't want to use such a machine with a third-party display. For me, one of the best features of any Apple computer is the display. So I wouldn't buy a super expensive Mac Pro and use it with a third-party display. But if I want to use the Mac Pro with the display, it's going to be over $10,000. And there's no way I'm spending that money on a computer. That's too much, even for me, John.
even for you. Well, you can just stop buying iPhones and iPads for 1 month and you'll be saving that money. You can just buy a Mac Pro.
There's no way. So I'm going to go for the iMac Pro, which is quite expensive as well. But yeah, it's more reasonable and comes with the display. So that's good.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going for the Mac Mini, and I think that my setup going forward is going to be the iPad for on the go and the Mac Mini when I'm at home. But I'm probably going to spec up the Mac Mini pretty much to the Mac specs in terms of the CPU, just to future-proof it a little bit. But at the same time, like, we're joking about me using this non-pro laptop, this 13-inch, you know, with no touch bar. And it's fine for me, honestly. I will probably be happy with the Mac Mini because it will be much faster, but still, my needs are not that great because I'm mostly doing coding and writing and these kind of things.
You're going to have the touch bar in sidecar.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, that's going to be a big touch bar, the biggest touch bar of them all. All right. Really cool to see. Well, I'm sure we're going to talk more about the Mac Pro later, but since neither of us are in the market for these incredibly spectacular in all kinds of ways, including the price products, then it's time to move on and take a little bit of a field trip, Rambo. We're going to go, it's not so far for you, it's much further for me, but we're going to go to Catalina, California. Ooh. And I've never been there. Looks like a nice place based on the wallpaper that they ship it with. But this is a new version of macOS. So tell us, what's new? But besides Sidecar, is there anything else that is exciting you?
Yeah, Catalina has Catalyst.
Yeah, exactly. And Catalyst, you know, we have to really, really try here not to call it Marzipan. But that's, of course, iOS apps running on the Mac. What do you think about the announcement? Like, a lot of people were talking before the event, like, how are they going to pitch this? Are they going to pitch it as, like, this new platform? Are they going to pitch it as an easy way to get your iOS apps on the Mac? What's the pitch going to be like? So how did you feel when you heard this? Was it satisfying to you? Or how did you feel about the way it looks right now?
I think they did a good job. But what I really want to talk about is how the fears people had about the quality these apps would have on the Mac were not correct, basically. Because I've been trying out the Podcasts app on the Mac, which is a Catalyst app. By the way, from the new apps, only catalyst, only podcasts is a catalyst or Marzipan app, TV, the music app, and the new Reminders app, which is on the Mac as well. Those are AppKit apps. But right. Podcasts is a catalyst app, and it looks just like a Mac app. It looks quite similar actually to, it uses like a similar design language to the music app, which is completely different. It's AppKit and it's based off of iTunes. But yeah, it looks very much like a Mac app. It has this beautiful sidebar. I love the sidebar. I love how the icons have this gradient and this drop shadow. It's so nice. I'm super excited about this. And I think they are making it super easy for developers to migrate their apps and support the Mac as well, while at the same time providing rich API for them to be able to have better interactions on the Mac. But they are also doing something that I think they talked about a lot on Connected and Upgrade, which is they are doing stuff with these new APIs that's going to make it a lot better to use these apps on iPad as well. So if you adopt some of this new API for the Mac, it's also going to benefit the iPad. And that makes it so developers will be more likely to adopt these new APIs.
Yeah. And that's really the two biggest kind of best case scenarios that we were looking for. And it looks like that's the direction we're heading in. Sure, it's not going to happen overnight. And I'm sure there's going to be a bumpy road and there's going to be examples of things that are not quote unquote Mac-like. But it does look great. And those two things, like you mentioned, are number one, the iPad gets better. So as the apps move over and they get more powerful features, a lot of those can also be, you know, backported or also implemented on the Mac, also on the iPad. But, and then the second time is that you don't want to be able to distinguish the apps, right? So when you say that the podcast app looks the same as music, that's exactly what you want, right? Yeah. You want to be able to do this, like, not blind test because you need to look at it, but you want to be able to do this test where you look at two apps and you can't tell which one is using which framework under the hood, because users shouldn't have to worry about that.
Yeah, that's true. So super happy about how they're doing this. And this is really good for the future of the Mac, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've gone on now for a while, and there's a lot of cool features in here. We haven't talked about ARKit. We haven't talked about this new voice control feature, which is really cool. But I think now we should segue into talking about the actual developer tools and the big announcement, which is Swift UI. And Swift UI very much ties into what we just talked about in that it's a new declarative UI framework. And I've personally been doing declarative UIs for quite a while, and I don't say that to sound hipster or no, oh, I was doing this for many years, but I've been a big fan of declarative programming models for UI for a long time. But there's always going to be this awkward situation if you're trying to do declarative UI programming on top of something that is imperative, like UIKit and AppKit was. So just to explain that a little bit to our non-developer friends, when you are doing declarative programming, you are more describing how you want something to behave or to look, and then the system kind of renders it for you. While if you're doing more imperative programming, you are describing each step of the way, or you are explicitly coding what's going to happen. So you're saying, draw this thing here, lay out it like this, move this thing over here. While with declarative programming, you're more describing, here's a list, here's an image, here's a button. And then the system kind of takes a lot of those decisions for you, which can be good, but it can also make it so it's a bit challenging. And that's why for third parties, it's been really hard to fully embrace a declarative programming model. But now Apple has announced their own declarative UI framework called Swift UI. And I've played around with it, Rambo. And I must say, first impressions are really good. I am very impressed at what they've done here. It's really cool to work with.
Yeah, I've done lots of UI work recently for a new project. And while I love doing UI work, at some point I was like, because there's something about labels on iOS, and labels are the objects used to display text on screen. Something about labels on iOS, and I do my UI in code, so every time I had to create a label, I was like, oh no, not a label again. And because you have to, like, Make a label. Now set the label font to be the system font bold. Now set the background color to be black. Now set the alignment. It becomes boring after a while. So
translates auto layout constraints into auto resizing mask equals false.
Translates auto resizing masks into constraints equals false. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it becomes boring after a while. And with this, it's like, here's a text and I want it to be bold. And that's it. And the system will do the right thing. And with UI label, you have to like support dynamic text manually. And that's the feature where the people with visual impairment, they can increase the text size. And then that's also a whole nother thing. So why does it have to be hard to be a good app? It doesn't. It doesn't, and now we have Swift UI to make it even easier. So, of course, there are times when you need something super custom, but it looks like you're going to be able to integrate both worlds quite easily, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because at the end of the day, what you do with this Swift UI framework is that you produce a view hierarchy. But these are not views as we know them if you've been doing iOS or Mac development before, where, like you mentioned, Rambo, you are setting all these properties manually and you are really stepping in, taking full control of everything that's going on. While with Swift UI, these view hierarchies that you're building are more a description of what you want to render. And then you're passing that onto the system. And the way this is kind of encapsulated in the API is that there's a special new view controller subclass for hosting these view hierarchies. So what you can do with that is that with our good old friend view controller containment and child view controllers, which both me and you, Rambo, were big fans of, you can take that view controller, embed it somewhere else in your other UI, and have that be its own thing. It can live on its own. It doesn't have to, you know, blur the lines a lot between the two worlds. And that way you can integrate Swift UI into any app or any part of any app.
And you can also write your own Swift UI components if you want to, right?
Yeah, of course, absolutely. And that's usually how you do things, like you are creating components that are basically building blocks of other components. And that might sound limiting, but there's this great quote. I will paraphrase him a little bit here, but our friend Dave DeLong, he has this great quote from one of his talks, which I remember vaguely being something like this, that all views are either composing other views, or they are either an image, a text, or just a background color. Something like that. Like, there's a very small amount of things that you're actually rendering on the screen. They're either like text, or images, or just colors, or something like that. Gradients. And those are things that already are in Swift UI, and you can then build your components as just a composition of those other system components.
That's really nice. But I bet you know what feature I like the most about Swift UI. It's something that moves.
Could it maybe start with Annie and end with Mations?
Of course. Magic move for UI.
That's fantastic, right? And it's funny because we've been talking about this not so much on the show, but offline, like, or not offline, but on iMessage. Like, wouldn't it be great if it was as easy to animate things in an app as it is to animate things in Keynote? Because we've been talking about that. We've been doing lots of animations in Keynote, and I really love Magic Move. And that's the exact quote they used. It's like, it's as easy as Magic Move in Keynote. Yeah. And I was like, yes, perfect.
Yeah, it's really nice. Like, I wouldn't have spent 50 hours on my transition if I had that.
The 50-hour animation all of a sudden becomes a 5-minute animation.
That's true, yeah. And I feel like iOS 13 and macOS 10.15 and all the other systems, I think these are going to be a cutting point for app support. What I mean by that is I think many apps are going to be releasing new versions at the end of the year in the fall, and they are going to only support the new OSs because all of these new features, you can always like integrate some of that with an app and like only have that feature in the new version. But there's so much foundational stuff, especially Swift UI, that I feel like many apps are going to be released later this year that are only iOS 13, 10 or 15, etc. and later. And we are currently in talks at the Chibi Studio crew of two people.
Chibi Studio HQ.
We are thinking about dropping all previous iOS versions with our fall release, which is probably going to be 2.1 or 2.2.
Yeah, you're probably going to see a lot of these Medium posts like, we rewrote it from the ground up, right?
Yeah.
Because we were talking on this show previously about how the iOS 6 to 7 transition prompted a lot of those also like big releases with dropping support and things like that. But in that time, it was more for like visuals. But this time, I think it's going to be more for infrastructure, like you say. And a lot of companies are probably going to take this opportunity to also do redesigns and to refresh their app, or maybe to drop some features that have been legacy for a while and things like that. So I do agree. I think we'll see a lot of big changes and a lot of big releases that are using these new tools. Perhaps not like immediately in September, but probably over the next like year or 2 years.
I mean, something we haven't talked about, but I'm gonna mention is that they are doing, I mentioned it briefly before, but they are doing something that I really wanted them to do is that it's to provide more of what they have in their apps to us. And an example of that, two examples of that are the SFUI rounded font, so the rounded SF font that they are using a lot more on iOS 13. That's now fully supported for third parties. And
Fantastic.
there's also SF symbols now, which is a huge collection of glyphs. And they have been specifically designed to work well next to the San Francisco fonts. So the SF text, the SF display, and the SF rounded, there are variations of glyphs for each different font for every weight. So from ultralight all the way to black. And there's this app for the Mac you can use to like get the glyphs and export them to a vector file, which you can customize. Some of them they don't allow you to customize for copyright reasons, but most of them you can. So that's really great. Like, anyone can now, you don't have to be a designer or you don't have to buy glyphs to be able to have a nice app with nice icons that combine with the font that you're using. And that's really cool.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm in a position where I'm not a great designer. I'm not going to claim that I'm a great designer, but I can usually get the job done, especially up to a point. But icons has still been one of those like last frontiers where I have to hire people or get people to help me, or you know, ask my designer friends to help me out or something like that. But beyond like the very, very basic of icons, because drawing like a nice inbox icon or a nice document icon or something like that, it's not trivial. But so I'm really, really happy to see this being introduced, and hopefully it will also be something that will standardize icons a little bit across apps and make it more intuitive for users. Because as people are chasing screen real estate and want to make more and more, they are like dropping labels from things like tab bars and things like this. It would be great to know that this icon means this thing, and if people are starting to adopt this font and these icons a bit more, I think it will be nice for everybody.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm super happy about that.
Yeah, me too.
Hey, Rambo from the future here. We were so excited about all the news that we actually forgot to talk about the poker results at the end of the episode. So we're gonna leave it as a cliffhanger for the next episode. So hang around for that. Please wait. It's gonna be worth it. Talk to you next week.
All right, so like we mentioned, we weren't really going for completion here. There's, of course, a ton of other things that we haven't talked about yet, and we will. We'll talk about it on upcoming episodes and dive deeper in as I will explore the APIs. I'll write lots of articles about all these new cool things. Rambo will, of course, start spelunking like he has already done and find out cool things and hidden things that are in there that we can talk about later on the show as well. Also, let us know what you want us to talk about. You can tweet with the hashtag AskStackTrace. Just tweet out into the Twitter sphere and we'll pick that up and we can talk about it on a future episode. Also, let us know what you thought about this episode as well. And we always like to hear feedback from you, our awesome listeners. But that's it for this episode. So thanks so much to our good friends at Mac Stadium for making this episode possible. Make sure to check them out and this new platform that they're launching at macstadium.com/stacktrace. And most of all, thanks you so much for listening, everybody. And you can find us at 9to5mac.com, at www.bisondell.com, on Twitter, Ramboys at _inside. I am at John Sundell. Make sure to find us there. But that's it. Say goodbye, Mr. Rambo.
Goodbye.